With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going, you're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the publisher fight. It's time for the publisher fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new England pound.
Hi, how's it going? And welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood, and I'm the editor-in-chief at Video Week. And this week's guest is Jacques Lamanque, who is CEO at Broadpeak. Jacques is one of those people, he's been in the streaming industry quite a while and has seen the industry evolve from close quarters over a very long period of time. Broadpeak are one of those companies, they, you know, sit between broadcasters, streaming platforms, telcos, and technology providers, which I think gives them a quite unique perspective on where the industry is heading and what challenges still need to be solved. Some of the things we talk about Rennes, which has become one of Europe's most important hubs for video and TV technology. One thing I'm always fascinated by is the way that France has been so successful at building these clusters of innovation around specialist industries. We also get into the biggest challenges facing streaming companies today, from delivering massive live events to many millions of viewers simultaneously, through to helping broadcasters compete in an increasingly measurable and performance-driven advertising market. We also get into AI and where it might have the biggest impact on TV and streaming, the changing relationship between broadcasters and global platforms, and whether the current wave of consolidation, particularly on the broadcaster side, will help, you know, create stronger competitors, particularly in Europe, on the global stage. In terms of the things coming up from Video Week, we've got a huge amount going on in H2. We've got the European CTV Advertising Guide coming up. That'll be launched in September. If you'd like to get involved in this year's guide, please do get in touch. Then we'll be hosting Video Week Cologne at Demexco. We'll be also launching the CTV Advertising Guide on the trade press stands there. And then we've got TV Rise, our TV Advertising Leadership Forum, which will be taking place in Seville from 19th to the 22nd of October. And of course, in 1st of October, I should jump back a little bit in time, we've got the European Video Awards coming up, which is the big night in video and TV, and is always a very fun night. So it'd be great to see you there. If your company would like to get involved in any of those, please get in touch via the Video Week website. Right, now I'll cross over to my conversation with Jacques, and I hope you enjoy. So, Jacques, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Vincent.
Great to have you here. And
thank you.
You know, for the people who don't know out there, you know, what is Broadpeak firstly? Let's get that sorted first.
Yeah, sure. So Broadpeak is a software company. So we specialize in video streaming technology. We are a leader in that space. And so basically we work with telecom operators, cable companies. We provide them with the on-prem software, you know, to deliver content, and we also work with streaming platforms or broadcasters, and we provide them a SaaS solution. So same software core in both cases, but different use case, I would say. We do everything from transcoding to packaging to delivering and monetization. And Broadpeak is headquartered in Rennes in France, in Brittany, the Westport, but we also present across 23 different countries. And if you think about it, you know, like if you aggregate basically the number of subscribers working for our customers or users, we touch more than 250 million people globally. You know, so it's all about streaming again. Yeah.
So, yeah, Rennes, isn't that something of a hub? You know, I think, you know, not only for sort of video technology in France, I think as in Europe, it's actually a hub. And I'm curious about how these hubs, you know, come about. You know, in France, you have a great talent for government policy aligning with the private sector, creating these commercial, tech hubs that produce many of Europe's most successful companies. What's the story of what's happened in Rennes?
Yeah, so for Rennes is a bit special. Yes, you're right. Actually, in video streaming, I was always amazed by the fact that when I started working in the streaming technology industry, I started in 2010 at Broadpeak at least, and I was working since 2000, in broadcast and everything. And you go to trade shows, and you hear English, you hear Hebrew, and you hear French. So lots of French company in that broadcast and streaming technology domain. About you're right, Rennes is a city where there is a lot of tech, and probably the reason for that is that you have a lot of computer science schools and colleges and for engineering electrical engineering degrees there, so it's very easy to hire. And also it's part of a French policy, they started a big movement in the it was in 1982. It's called the decentralization, and they tried to make sure that France is not all around Paris. So what they did in the 70s, 80s, so that they moved some Orange Labs, France Telecom at the time in Rennes, and you could see Alcatel coming there, and a lot of now Nokia, so a lot of tech companies going around Orange Labs, and it became like a cluster. And to your point, if you go to Rennes, you visit Broadpeak, you can also visit Harmonic, MediaKind, ATEM, Vantiva, Synamedia, everybody's there. So in the end, it's also a cluster. It makes it easy for companies to hire and to find the right talent, And about your question about why, it's the tech in France and everything, it's because, if you decide to get a career into engineering, it's people value that a lot, So some of the highest the biggest degree or the best degrees in France, and with the tough, selective processes, are for some of the best engineering schools. So we got maybe it's some same culture you find in India, for example, So we value a lot of tech, so that's why a lot of people with talent go into that career, and then it becomes attractive to invest in France and develop that. But you're right. Rennes is known for cybersecurity now because they have maybe 3,000 to 4,000 engineers working on cybersecurity. But next to that, video streaming is definitely a hotspot, for France and for Europe. Yeah.
And yes, cybersecurity is such a huge
It's
industry at
big.
the
It's
moment as
big. Yeah,
well.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's
Crazy. Yeah.
I don't think I appreciated just how big it was until the last year or so, and I think it's probably only going to grow over the next few years.
Oh, yeah.
So you've been working the TV and streaming industry for a long time, and you've been through a lot of changes. I'm curious what are the biggest challenges for your customers today?
Yeah, so today, and it's a good point because, right now it's the Soccer World Cup. We are in the middle of it, so one of the challenge for our customers is to stream at scale. And each time you have a big competition, whether you're talking about Super Bowl, or IPL, in India, so it's all about streaming at scale. That's the first challenge. If you spend a lot of money into rights, and also, rights for content, and you get subscription, or you secure some advertising campaign, you cannot fail. So streaming at scale is on top of the agenda of our customers. And the next thing is how they can monetize, and maximize the monetization. Two ways to do that, the first way is, of course, advertising, because again, with digital advertising, there are lots of ways you can improve, your revenue or increase your ARPU, and I believe that Netflix showed the way in that regard, But next to advertising, you also have anti-piracy. Fighting piracy is a good way to bring subscribers back, and to increase your revenue, So really, if you can stream at scale, if you can monetize with ads and fight piracy, I believe that you're all set.
Yep. When it comes to large streaming events, you give the example of the World Cup or the IPL. I think it's often hard for people to understand the complexity involved. I think you'd be forgiven as a layman for, just questioning why, the streamer hasn't just invested in extra capacity to make it all work, buy more hard drives, turn it up to 11, as Ronan McCarthy from DAZN said to me. But what's, why is streaming to millions of people at the same time still so difficult in 2026? We're quite a few years into this now. What are the challenges?
So different challenges, and again, it's I agree with you. You could say, this has been done, so why is it so complicated? It's even complicated for the best. I've always been inspired since we started Broadpeak by Netflix with the quality of experience and everything. But even they fail, even they're like struggle. You remember the boxing game with Tyson,
Yes,
so it was like it was all over the news. So the reason why it's difficult, so it's difficult on different fronts. So it can be difficult per market. But you were mentioning DAZN, and when they did like the club, championship, like a competition, it was even more complicated because now you have to address every single market. So let's come back to the market. So if you are in one single market, already you need to make sure that you secure the capacity, because the issue is that when you are like streaming your content, other things are happening on the internet, and even if you buy, like lots of capacity, video is not like a data like another. If it buffers, if you have like some congestion, then you will see it, on the screen. You will have some impact on the experience. So it's very hard, especially for live, because you get big peaks of traffic. It's not only delivering the peak, it's also the ramp up, of users getting onto your system. The latency, you can start playing with latency, but then when you do when you are aggressive on latency, you have more you have less cushion, less buffer, so you're taking more risk. So already, it's a big issue nationally, and that's why a lot of content providers, streaming platforms, they not only they buy CDN capacity, but they also try to reserve capacity, for the event. They're ready to pay for to reserve capacity for the peak. And I believe it's a never-ending game, because more and more now streaming is the main way of delivering content. Before, you could just say, well, if it doesn't work on streaming, I'll go back to terrestrial. But in many cases, there is an exclusivity on content, and that's the only way you can deliver it is through streaming. So if streaming doesn't work, then you're really out of luck. So we have ways for that, for fighting this, fighting this uncertainty of being able to deliver with a peak. We have a solution called Multicast ABR, and we invented it in 2012, and it's widely used. And the good thing about this, about Multicast ABR, is that you don't need to worry about whether you have like one person watching or 10 million people watching, because it will take the same, amount of traffic on your network. So that's one way to erase the peak, but it's not available everywhere. It doesn't work everywhere. Not everybody's got a multicast network, so you still need, like, to do the capacity planning, put the cache, secure the capacity, reserve some bandwidth ahead of time, and for a national market. But if you're talking, like you were mentioning DAZN again, so if you're talking about international or global, you need to do that in every single market, so it's even tougher. And I believe it's a good problem, so to work on this capacity planning and make sure you can deliver a good quality. Still a challenge.
So it might be worth just explaining what multicast is for. I wouldn't assume that everybody knows. I know it's old hat to you, and you've been doing it a long time now. But yeah, might be worth just explaining.
Sure. So how multicast works. So the idea is that you send the content only once to across the network, and people will subscribe to it. So it was a way television over internet was delivered initially, with some of the initial projects with Orange, for example, in 2005, or PCCW, in Hong Kong, or Chunghwa Telecom in Taiwan. So the way they did it, and lots of people followed, is that they send the TV via a multicast channel for each TV channel, and the set top box will tune into, you know, the channel when people would watch. So basically, you know, that would work perfectly on a managed network. You would not have any issue with scales or anything. But, you know, recently what happened is that because people want to watch on any type of device, and also there is like a big incentive to move everything to streaming, you know, and not to use any proprietary technology or managed networks. You know, you want it to work on the open internet, so that's why people move from multicast for live TV to unicast and to full streaming. And the issue is that when you have like for each person viewing, you need a unicast session. So that's why you run into like congestion and things like that. So at Broadpeak, what we've done with multicast is that we've made it possible to stream using multicast, meaning that we put every channel in a multicast channel, and in the broadband gateway at home, we break it out, you know, or in the set-top box. So people will watch from their TV at home using streaming. But actually, they will not stream from the network. They will stream from their gateway, you know. So, and that gateway will be fed with a multicast. So the idea is that it scales, you know. So it remains a streaming experience. Nobody knows, the device doesn't know it's using multicast, but in the network, at least you're using multicast. So you can erase the peaks of traffic, you know. So, you know, dealing with peaks, it's in our name, Broadpeak, you know, that's the name of the company. And really, it's a good way of doing it. So many people are adopting it. But again, as I was saying, it's not available everywhere. Some people they don't have a multicast network, and it's only for those, you know, like early champions of IPTV, you know, or cable TV who have like some multicast infrastructure who can leverage it. But it's not for everyone. You know?
So, just getting on to ad formats, you know, we're seeing various new ad formats emerge, many of which are quite successful, actually. From, you know, new ad formats aren't necessarily easy to create, but, you know, we've got the pause ads, we're seeing more, you know, interactive ads and, you know, shoppable experiences or shoppable ads. I'm curious which of those you think has the biggest potential.
Yeah, I would say so. You're saying between post ads, interactive ads, and shoppable ads.
Yeah.
So the one that has the most potential is definitely shoppable ads. You know, like the ability to click with your remote, you know, on the TV and to get something in your cart. You know, like the type of product, you know, you buy often. Well, that's a killer app, you know, but it's not that easy to implement because you need the connection with the retailers, you know. But again, the one that has the most potential. Now, in terms of value, you know, for a click, I would say, or for an action. So, but the other call to actions, interactive ads where you can like send like a voucher to your a link to an app or a call to action to download an app. It has a lot of potential as well, you know. So, and pause ad is a good way to get. I would say pause ad is a good way to get into it, you know, and to especially for large broadcasters, it's a good way for them to enter performance advertising because one issue is that, I mean, it's not really the technology, but for me, the big issue is that if you're doing brand advertising, you're making so much money with that that you don't want to put it at risk by selling performance ads, you know, that are like that work differently, you know. So I would say like the post ads value is that you can start doing some performance advertising without disrupting your brand advertising business. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, click to cart, retail, that's the best value. Yeah.
I'm seeing the, you know, the shoppable ads on Amazon, and
yeah.
I've yet to buy anything, but there is something about, even with their presence there, it makes you consider it momentarily. Sort of eases you all along a bit. I don't know, maybe it distracts from the brand experience. I probably should have added home screen ads into the mix there as well, because I feel like, you know people talk about display being dead, and I really don't think it is. And when you see those formats that they're kind of the next generation of display, I personally find them hugely impactful, and they're almost like an impressive outdoor ad in terms of the impact that they have on me. But so TV is obviously becoming more measurable and more performance driven. What do you think broadcasters need to do to, truly compete in that world? Particularly with regard to the, SME market, but also just for general performance advertisers.
Yeah, so they need the stack, of course, so because you were talking about different formats, and they need the technical stack, and we provide that. Others probably try and provide that, so but for me, the big challenge for them is really to avoid to be in a Kodak situation, for especially for the big broadcasters. I'm talking, Vincent, about the ones that are very successful today, like the TF1 of the world, the Atresmedia Media of the world, the big broadcasters. So the issue for them, the big challenge for them, in my opinion, is that they're very successful with brand advertising, and the way it works is that they negotiate budgets, to sell the highest volume for the lowest price. That's what they do, so they basically they sell to buyers, and they guarantee to deliver, So the different model for this, they can do. They can sell spots, or so you will buy as many impressions as possible, of your brand, or they can also do audience buying, and now they guarantee that this will be the spot will be shown to the right audience, so to the targeted audience. And this is for them, it's a business where they control the negotiation, they can set the price, and in lots of cases they are able to fill their inventory with this, so this is a high value branding for them. But they know they have to tap into the digital advertising, because this is the part that is growing fast, and we know that the brand advertising on TV, this is not a market that is growing, so it's growing on streaming, but it's going down on the legacy TV, so overall it's kind of flat. So the growth is really into performance advertising. The issue is that, if you compare with Kodak, performance advertising is like a digital photography for them, so it's a new thing. But they don't want to kill the old business, and they should not kill the old business, of course. So, because then for performance advertising, the business model is quite different, because they are like some they need to maximize the value through auctions. There is no real negotiation. There is a guarantee to get result for the one buying the ad, but there is no guarantee to deliver. So if you compare to brand advertising, now in that case, the broadcaster is selling to sellers, which is very different. So for me, the big challenge for broadcasters is how can they protect their existing brand advertising business, and in the meantime develop some performance advertising revenue. And for me, the good way to do it is to keep the inventory and they have for brand advertising that is already sold, and create new inventory. And you were talking about post ads. It's a new inventory, so it doesn't exist for brand advertising much, so if you can start selling post ad for performance advertising, or if you can try, to use like a linear addressable TV, for example, so we work with TF1 on that one. When you do linear addressable TV, what you do basically is that instead of like placing an ad that the audience is not targeted to, so basically if you sell, some makeup to a man who is not targeted, you will not be able to bill for that. So that ad is kind of lost. So with linear addressable TV, what you can do is that you can use that spot and sell it for performance advertising through auction. So you're not putting your business at risk, and you're really, tapping into digital advertising. So I believe that's really the performance, Vincent. So for me, it's not so much the tech stack, so we have ways again to help broadcasters collaborate with telcos, for instance, to get first party data from them, so that you can make sure that the SMS will land on the right phone and everything, you know. But no, for me, the challenge is that how do you maintain your brand advertising and start developing in the meantime without cannibalizing the first? You can, start into performance advertising.
So all of this obviously is taking place across a backdrop of an AI revolution. I'm curious about how you think AI is going to sort of change streaming or TV generally over the next couple of years.
Yeah, so for, yeah, of course, AI. You know, it's AI. I think it helps. Yeah, so of course, there is a creation of content that can change things in terms of the content available. But if you come back to two aspects, maybe the technical aspect in the streaming chain. So for us, for example, we use a lot of AI, and our customers do too, for simple things that are dubbing. You know, so like a. Dubbing, I know dubbing is horrible, Vincent, in France, you know, like one of the reasons why we speak with horrible accent in English and we're not good in English is that when we were kids, everything was dubbed, you know, so we, and I know that for most people, you know, it's horrible to get dubbing, but, you know, still in some, in many countries, you want some dubbing, and especially for small markets, it's complicated to monetize them, I mean, correctly the dubbing, or at least to have the return on investment. So AI for dubbing is perfect, you know, or for indexing content, you know, or for troubleshooting streaming protocols or streaming, you know, infrastructures. It's just perfect. I see for advertising also it plays a big role because if you want to generate some creative for, especially if we were talking about performance advertising earlier, you know, so if you want to create a short video clip where you can click to get a notification or to put something in the cart, well, now with the AI tools, you give the address of your website, and for $10, you know, you can get a short video. So I believe like the barrier of entry for advertising is becoming much lower. So it's one of the big benefit I would say for AI, you know, like definitely a good I mean AI is disrupting many verticals, but for streaming, yeah, it's helping a lot, especially for creative ads, yeah.
And you know the TV industry is you know let's say the TV industry. I'm talking about more the homegrown European industry. They're both you know competing with the likes of you know YouTube, Netflix, Amazon, Disney, but they're also often working with them and very collaboratively. I mean, how do you think they should navigate those relationships?
Well, I believe that they, for broadcasters, you know, they need to work. Yeah, they need to work with every platform. They need to make sure that their content is being seen. That it's critical. After that, it's also good that they are in control. You know, like of the destiny. So we got some customers, for example, in APAC. One of our customers in APAC, they got like tens of millions of subscribers on the on YouTube, but. They should have a real control, you know, on the monetization part. So why they want to maintain that? They're starting their own app, you know, so that they can really have a total control of the monetization. For me, one way of doing it is also making sure that while you appear on all these platforms, you get as much control as possible on the advertising part. You know, whether this is like asking for the ability to work with different sales house or having the ability to get your own stack, you know, like for the advertising or so again, you know, so it's important for them to make sure that they can appear on every single platform and but they need to keep some control. And also, you know, for it works the other way around because for people like Amazon, for example, you know, so I'm sure, like the Amazon ads, the sales house would love to work outside of Prime, you know. So, and they're trying to develop their business outside of it, also, you know. So I believe like it's important for them to be on any platform, on every platform, but they need to stay in control, stay in the driver's seat, I would say, for the monetization part. You know?
So we've seen a lot of consolidation taking place in Europe on the TV side. There's almost too many t to mention. So apologies to anyone if you're listening and I haven't mentioned your acquisition. But yeah, we've ITV with Sky here in the UK. We've got RTL joining forces with Sky Deutschland. MFE, who are, extremely strong in Spain and Italy, acquiring ProSieben in Germany. Do you think that this consolidation is going to result in, bigger and stronger broadcasters, streaming platforms that will be better positioned to compete in Europe and perhaps even globally?
I think so. No, totally agree. You were mentioning media acquisition. There was also, Canal Plus recently acquired MultiChoice, for example, or it can be through acquisition. It can be also through organic developments. Like I know that TF1, it's one of the big, it's the biggest French broadcaster and probably one of the biggest in Europe. And with French speaking, content, they have a strategy to, they have a real strategy, to bring like hundreds of millions of French speaking, viewers. So big is beautiful, of course, in many cases, because you can amortize the cost of your stack, the cost of content, and so it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't mean like you cannot be successful if you are like focused and on your content, on niche content, So, but for me, the race to the scale only works if you can grow your business outside of only subscription, and if you can make sure that you tap into that digital advertising that we were talking about earlier. And for me, it's also an existential need, to grow and to tap into advertising. If you think about it, in every national market or on every continent, what happens is that you produce your content, so you need to maximize the value. But a lot of the retails of the retailers, money for advertising goes to Google or it will go to Amazon, for example, for Prime or YouTube, And the risk there is that if they cannot catch some of these dollars or euros, they will have less and less money to produce content. So for me, going at scale means being also, of course, to get more viewers, but it means also being able to attract in each market that you where you go, being able to attract the digital advertising dollars, So that's for me it's critical. But definitely we will see more of that, So if you can get more viewers, more audience, and capture more money for your content, yeah, it's a scale game, yeah.
I have to say, yeah, take my hat off to TF1 as well. It's an
Yeah.
innovation game as well, and they've been doing some absolutely fantastic stuff lately. And yeah, bringing on board some, they've always had impressive people, but yeah, it's they're definitely bringing on people with a sort of technology background and mentality, and yeah, very much people who are future facing. I'm curious if we were to have this conversation again in, I think the time frames, let's say 3 years' time. I feel like that's reasonable. What do you think will have changed most in the streaming industry?
Well, 3 years from now, it goes so fast that that's a tough question. But what will we see in 3 years? I would say for live content, I think we will the latency, story will be at the heart of a lot of a concern for streaming platforms. And latency, you don't really care if you are like if you have exclusive rights because nobody's going to compare. But in many cases, when you get like the notification, for a goal ahead of time, it's really annoying. And I talked to customer, and one of them told me, to my question, I was like, "How important is latency to you?" He told me, "I want to see the event live." And I said, "What do you mean live?" And he said, "I want to see it as if I were in the arena, in the game." So we'll see less and less latency. I believe people will be more aggressive to deliver content on time, live. So that's we'll see a lot of that, I believe. In terms of a hopefully, you know, it's more like I can hope for it and then again foresee it. But what I would love to see in 3 years is broadcasters and streaming platforms capturing, you know, like digital advertising, seeing more and more, you know, like retail shop addressing not only Google for not only going for Google or YouTube, you know, for the ads and seeing them capture some clicks, you know, from TF1 or RMC or Atresmedia, Media, for example, in Spain, all these people, you know. So yeah, I think that if we can see that in the, it's more like a wish, you know, like because I know that there are some challenges and related to that, but I'd love to see that, you know, like less latency and more performance advertising. And coming back maybe to an early question, you know, like it's really important because you were talking about scale companies getting together, but if at some point you cannot capture some of that digital advertising money, it's going to be harder to produce content, you know. So for me, in 3 years, what I hope for and what I love to see is the local content, you know, thrive because, you know, I think in France we need more French content. In Italy we need more Italian content. Same thing in Mexico and Canada, you know, like UK. So that's really diversity there, you know. That's what we want to see because Netflix is great, YouTube too, but we don't want to be doomed and have only this as a these two platforms as an option. Or with Prime there will be three options. Yeah.
I'm quietly optimistic about the move to performance advertising. I think in the past I've seen, you know, various things being scoffed at. Oh, the TV industry is trying to be like Facebook or, you know, but I really think that this is something that's going to work. And I've only ever heard stories about advertisers just being amazed by what TV does for them, especially when they're a digital native advertiser and, you know, their eyes light up and it's, you know, they almost can't believe the success that they see. So yeah, I'm feeling very optimistic that this really is something
Yeah, me
that they,
too. Yeah.
I just hope that they don't burden themselves with too much cost in doing it in delivering it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if it's then, you know, they need also, they act like the Kodak, you know, effect. So they need to make sure they're ready to take a reasonable risk, you know, and start initiating the pump, even if it puts at risk a little bit the brand advertising, you know. You need to, yeah,
Yeah,
they need to do
that
that.
question of the innovator's
Yeah.
dilemma. It's something that again that I feel like many of them are aware of, and you know, there's a cultural shift. Maybe 5 to 10 years ago, I would have had more concerns about the culture at, you know, many broadcasters, and these days I feel like there's been a big shift and there's a recognition for change. So I'm quietly optimistic, and yeah, really hope it's going to work. So if I were to give you 10 million, we give 10 million, we'll give you your choice of currency. As you're in France, it should probably be euros, to invest. And, you know, it can't be in Broadpeak. Where would you invest that money and why?
Only 10, Vincent. You promised me, you know, when we talk about the interview, you would give me 100 or something like
It's been a tough year. It's been a tough year.
that. Yeah. So, you know, like, well, if I cannot invest in Broadpeak, so of course he gave me 10 million and he let me do what I want with it. I'll buy more shares, that's for sure. But let's say if I have to invest it elsewhere, I would bet on something I'm already doing, but on a much lower scale. I would say I would buy some TF1 stock. I believe they can, you know. So they are like they are a champion in Europe. They have this play with French speaking content. So it puts them on in a different, you know, like plane. They are not going right after Netflix or Prime or whatever, you know, or YouTube. So they have a unique position. They have like so I would invest that the money. Yeah, I would put the 10 million on TF1, you know, like because I believe that with, again, they are in a position where they have like a strong relationship with the brands. They have like the critical mass so that they can invest in the is the technology needed for this, you know, and I'm sure they can be extremely successful there. So that would be my bet, Vincent.
No, I think that's a very solid bet as well. It's like I say, there just seems to be great energy and momentum at TF1 at the moment, and with
So a quick question, then. So I have to give you the money back, or I can keep all of it for me, you know? So
well, I think it's France, so you're gonna have a chunky tax bill on
okay.
that. I don't know what you'd be left with to invest, but it'll be no, I think that's a, we might even double the money considering
Right, the tax,
it looks
Well, thank you,
to
appreciate
favor. Yeah.
the
Jacques, that was an absolute pleasure, and thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.